And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
This podcast was recorded before news broke that Ben Chilwell and Mason Mount are isolating after interacting with Scotland player Billy Gilmour. It was announced earlier on Monday that Gilmour has tested positive for COVID-19. Chilwell and Mount are now both doubts for England's match against the Czech Republic at Wembley on Tuesday.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the England Show pod on The Athletic. Coming up today, we'll look ahead to England's final group game of Euro 2020 against the Czech Republic. With us today, Lindsay Hooper, David Priest, and The Athletic's Jack Pitbrook. And a little bit later on, we'll talk to a Czech journalist as well to get some insight into the Czech Republic side. But first, let's just reflect on what we've seen from England so far. I will start with you, Jack, because just before recording, I did say I feel like I could be stuck in any tournament from about the last 20 years as regards England at the moment. I feel like we're close to having the same discussions about the same things that we've had over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, so Friday night's game did very much remind me of the Cape Town Classic, the 0-0 against Algeria in 2010, where England were again booed off. And, you know, Wayne Rooney famously saying to the camera, it's nice to have your own fans booing you, isn't it? Or the just as impressive 0-0 against Slovakia in France in Euro 2016, when Roy Hodgson made multiple changes for the third group game and England were appalling. They were so bad, I think, that we should have known, really, that Iceland was coming at that point. Now, looking back on the game on Friday night against Scotland, a draw is not a bad result. You know, England won 4 points in a good position, but it was the performance that I think was so ominous. Like, England just didn't play very well at all. They looked nervous, I think. They looked very cautious. They didn't create anything. They didn't really cause Scotland any problems. Scotland were the better team, created more chances, I think. And given all the attacking players that Gareth Southgate has at his disposal, that raises some pretty big questions about England's attacking play through the rest of the tournament, I think.
I think what's more criminal as well, Jack, is the tournaments that you've pointed out, you know, being in Cape Town, being in France, they were away. This is at Wembley. This is in our own back garden. And I think that is the part that's most unforgiving about it at the minute, is we're watching Italy just fly through the tournament. And OK, they might not have come up against very, very stiff opposition yet, but they've made that home advantage count. No one's got a goal past them. And I feel like England at Wembley should be putting on more of a performance. I don't think the performance is actually Chappers. We're too dissimilar. The first game, it was a very similar out the blocks, create quite a few chances in the first 20 minutes and then fade away. And that's exactly what happened in the game against Scotland. There was one move from Phillips and Sterling that undid Croatia. There could have been one move from Sterling, because I do think that should have been a penalty, actually, that could have undone Scotland. But all in all, we had hysteria from the fact that Phillips played so well and that we'd won our opening game for the first time. And I understand why we got caught up in that. I got caught up in it too. But actually, if we level ourselves out and objectively look at it, both performances were pretty drab.
David?
There has been a bit of an overreaction to both of the results. I think they haven't set the world alight, but at the same time, it's been solid. But at the same time, it's been very safe, especially the Scotland game. And I think that there's been a lot of talk about whether we should play three at the back, four at the back, or whatever system we play. Especially when we play four at the back, whether it's 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3. The biggest thing in those systems is the fullbacks. That's your attacking outlet. That's where especially when both sides are playing similar systems, that's where the space is. You have to, especially if you've got inverted wide men playing up front as well. If you know you've got Foden and Sterling, they're the ones they're going to come inside naturally. You have to get your fullbacks forward, and that's why I thought it was disappointing with the Scotland performance, because I thought that's what the reason the changes were made.
Your answer indicates that this is what they're being told to do that is the problem, rather than how they're performing. Because you know, Reece James, Luke Shaw on Friday night, and even Kyle Walker and Kieran Trippier on against Croatia. You've got four fullbacks there who aren't exactly averse to attacking.
On top of that, you know, if we're playing two defensive midfielders, then that gives them even more license to go forward. They're in that position to be covering both sides, so they can both be forward at the same time. Michael Cox did a great piece on it about why we weren't breaking down Scotland, and that was one of the main reasons. And a lot of the time it was, you're right, it's not a position, they weren't high enough up the pitch. And even when the opportunity arose, I think they did it twice in the game successfully. But there was still only another two or three times after that when the opportunity was there for them to do it. And we're talking, we're going to talk about Harry Kane, but we're never going to give Harry the service that he needs and give him the opportunities that he needs if we're not going to be a little bit more attacking in those areas.
Yeah, that was an interesting piece made in Alan Shearer and Mark Carey's piece about Harry Kane's performance, which we published the other day, where Shearer was saying that if he was Kane, he would have been pretty annoyed with Reece James just because Kane was getting into the box. James, you know, we know that he's a really good attacking right back for Chelsea. We know that he's got a really good delivery on him. And the few times that England got James into kind of positions where he could cross from, rather than just getting the ball into the box, he would just play it back to Foden or back to Phillips. The lack of aggression, the lack of risk-taking from the England fullbacks, you know, it was really, really damning and clearly one of the main reasons why England didn't create anything. And I'm sure that Kane would rather that the fullbacks just kind of tried to get the ball into him early, into the box.
As far as Kane's concerned as well, is there a problem that we've not spoken about yet, which is Sterling and Foden playing together? If we look at that Manchester City team, Pep has, within an inch of their life, trained them to play without a centre-forward. And I feel like they're not picking out Kane enough and that they're carrying on from their club form. They've played together quite a lot this season. And I feel like that might be part of the issue there, that there is a big clamour, I think, now to change things up. Sterling has looked one of the most threatening players for us, I think. But it's not working at the minute.
I can feed in several people that I've spoke to over the last few days at varying levels with different countries about what they throw into it, which refer to all of your points. So let's deal with the bigger picture first of all and how England are being viewed, because I was with Ashley Williams and Mark Hughes last night after Wales qualified with 4 points, and Ashley did say to me, off air, he said, I know why, but England are on 4 points and there's all this doom and gloom, David, and Wales are on 4 points and they've finished second and they've qualified. And you sort of have to think, if you're going to be realistic, England are going to qualify, which is all they need to do at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, the expectation of both countries goes along with that. Of course it does. But at the same time, I think we're expecting ourselves to blow everyone away. We're expecting to play this great football. And I know that is the aim. But at the end of the day, Gareth Southgate, if he's being strategic about this, then he'd be quite happy with the way things have gone. And, you know, when we go into games, I've thought about this a lot, about how we attack games. And it's great when we're seeing people like Italy, like they're playing with so much intensity. And that's how we want to play. We try to, you measure yourself against those better sides. But at the same time, I quite like the fact that we're starting games solid, but then as the game goes on and Gareth sees what he needs to adjust in the games, then I think he needs to be more proactive and more attacking once we've settled into those games. And especially with the five substitutes now, it gives you so much more license to be more strategic in games and sort of to break the game up into different periods. And so I just think from that point of view that I don't think he'll be panicking too much.
Because then you follow it on, Rio Ferdinand said to me, he must have used the word pragmatic 10 times in the chat I had with Rio. And his point was, these players are too good or there's such a squad depth that you don't need to be pragmatic.
And the reason that there is such a disparity between how Wales are viewed and how England are viewed is just look at the squads. Look at Wales' squad. They've got players from the Championship playing in that team. And if you look at the Premier League, which arguably is the biggest league in the world, over the last few years, we have seen more English talent emerge and play week in, week out in front of international audiences for the best clubs, the best teams. And that has been English talent that we've got used to seeing. Now, the FA changed things there so that we got more talent coming through the system. And we've seen it. And we've seen it week in, week out be the best. So we're told that we have a lot of the best players. Not only do we have a 1 to 11, we've got a 1 to 23 now that's supposedly up there to compete with anybody. And that's why there's the disparity. Because, you know, Wales are shooting from the hip with players that, you know, can't even... Look at Danny Ward. Can't even get a starting place week in, week out. That's why it's different.
And then the final thing, Jack, here, and it goes back to how England have played, Jack Wilshere said to me, he's fed up of watching, and this isn't just in relation to England, this is the modern game, fed up of watching a lot of players who will worry more about their pass completion rate than taking a risk.
That's a really interesting point. I wonder how much of that is down to the players worrying about their stats versus the managers wanting to play in a certain way. So if you look at France, for example, France play a really pragmatic game, which I think Southgate has more or less modelled how England play on. And they've got some incredibly gifted players, and they could play a much more expansive style. But, you know, he's got, I mean, certainly the last World Cup, it was Pogba and Kante sat in front of the defence. Now it's Pogba, Kante and Rabiot in the midfield three. Now, maybe on an individual level, Paul Pogba would like to be able to play in a more expressive, expansive way. But obviously for France, Didier Deschamps gives him a very specific job to do. So I wonder whether, I mean, look, obviously Jack Wilshere will know more about this than I do. But I wonder whether midfielders playing a cautious game is because the managers want them to play in a cautious way because they think that's the way to win an international football. That's Deschamps' insight. And I think that's what Southgate's trying to do as well.
There's a real sort of close line between pragmatism and controlling in these games. Now, you know, you look at the way the Chelsea have approached their season since Tuchel took over, and his game's more about control, and he tweaks it to what the opposition offer him and what he can take advantage of. And I think this is like the fine line that England tread, and they normally tread just on the wrong line of side of it, whereas they're trying to play this passing game. They want to have control of games, but it's about making the right decision when to break out of that. So when they're coming to the ball and they want to be on the ball and they try the short passes, those aren't going to hurt teams. Those passes aren't going to hurt teams. And it's so much easier for teams to defend against us because they can just shuffle across. They're not, you know, breaking them out the shape a lot of times. What they have to do is they have to recognise when to miss a player out, whether it's just passing it along the back or whether it's passing through the lines. And I reference Italy again. They pick the right moments all the time. They're a little bit more, you know, they're so much more intense than they ever have or than I've ever seen them. But that's what they do. They miss players out so that they break up the structure of the team in front of them. And then they can take advantage of that. And that's when they can sort of take advantage of spaces that they've created.
Let's also reference a team that I think we've been pretty similar to, and that's Spain. You know, these Spain performances at this tournament haven't been wholly dissimilar to England. A lot of passing. And what have the Spanish media been like? They've been on their backs. They've been on their backs a lot more, I think, than English media have.
And you could argue, you know, that Luis Enrique within the Spanish team has favourites. Do you think, David, that Gareth Southgate has favourites? The Athletic has been told that in amongst the big Daniel Taylor, Greg Evans piece on Grealish's relationship with Southgate. And the second part of that question is, if he does, is there actually anything wrong with that?
No, because I think all managers will pick players that they trust. And I know that the FA are massive on behaviours. Now, whether that's their, you know, what they're actually doing in the game related to the ball and tactics, or whether it's sort of body language, or in the players that he chooses, you know, he has that sort of those sort of characters, and he knows he's the likes of Sterling. He knows he can trust him. He's done it from before. And I think Jack's problem is that I don't think it's the perception of him as a person and what he does away from the game. I think it's just because he hasn't had enough minutes on the pitch for Gareth to trust him and be able to think that, you know, whatever system I play, you know, he's going to stick to the principles that I want. And I think even for the ones, those of us who've been sort of clamoring for him to be in the side, you know, why do we want him to be in the side? Because we see that little bit of maverick in him. He gives us something a little bit different on the ball. Without the ball, is he as disciplined? He's probably a lot more disciplined than he used to be. But also, like I said, sometimes with those players, what they give you, they take away from the other side of it.
Jack?
I think Southgate is probably also aware of the fact that the other players in that position just have much more relevant experience than Grealish does. Like Mount, Foden, Sterling, Rashford, even Sancho, who's a fair bit younger than Grealish. They've all been playing for top clubs for the last few years. They've all been playing the Champions League. They've pretty much all won trophies. And they just, you know, they're used to playing at a kind of elite level. Whereas Grealish, you know, obviously Grealish is incredible for Villa, but he hasn't played that much in the Premier League. And when he has been playing the Premier League, he's been the best player on an average team. And that's kind of different from what Southgate wants, I think.
And Southgate has rewarded him with minutes. He has had time. That's more than Sancho has had this tournament so far. I mean, has it got to be that in order for Grealish to shine, he's got to start? Because I don't think he's done too much coming off the bench at the minute to make Gareth think any differently.
Yeah, well, like I said before about being solid at the start of a game, I think that's, you know, it goes away from what he wants. You know, he doesn't want to be going into games. Like I said, if you break the games up strategically, first 30 minutes, first 45 minutes, he obviously doesn't want to give any goals away. So he might see that Grealish might be one that's taken advantage of in that respect. It's okay being a game changer as well, but as long as they do it when they come in. And I think it's with the substitutions, you know, it is a great way of sort of being really tactical inside the game with those substitutions. And that's why I'm kind of against Henderson starting games, because I don't like having to go in, when you're going into the games at the start of a game, that you're already making a substitution, which in his case you might have to do after an hour.
Also, in this debate on players, you know, Grealish being the prime example, but there are others. You know, Raf Honigstein's written a read on The Athletic about, which is entitled "England Turning Brilliant Sancho into the Invisible Man is Baffling the Germans." We all know, and it's not just in football here, Lindsay, that you can automatically become a better player by not being in the starting 11. So you know, if you'd flipped it the other way and the performances were the same and Grealish had started both and Sancho had started both and so on and so forth, and the performances had been the same, there'd then be a clamour to get Foden in and there'd be a clamour to get Raheem Sterling back in. That is how it works.
Yeah, and in Grealish's defence, if he's abiding by instructions from Gareth Southgate when he does come on, if he's not given that freedom, you know, you think when that substitute's made, we're making presumptions that indicates let's go for it, let's give some freedom creatively going forward. But that might not be the instruction. And then if that's the case, the problem's with Southgate, isn't it?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is The England Show from The Athletic. Keep up to date with all of our Euro 2020 podcasts and writing by following us at The Athletic UK.
Jack mentioned the Alan Shearer, Mark Carey piece. So Mark is The Athletic's data analyst, and they've done this piece breaking down exactly how and why Harry Kane is struggling with England, as Mark will explain for us now.
I think it's important to start by saying that it is just two games. I think, you know, he came into the tournament looking sharp and obviously came off the back of being the top goal scorer and assist maker in the Premier League. So it's important to caveat it with that. But, I think, you know, three shots in total across the two games for England does tell a story in itself. And granted, the chances that he did have were good ones for England, but it's certainly lower than you would want from your main striker. And you can kind of understand that low number of shots if he was contributing elsewhere. I mean, we all know that Kane has been well known for how well he's done in dropping deep and creating for Spurs last season in particular. But I think the problem at the moment is that he's hardly been getting on the ball at all for England. And if we look into the numbers, he's had 26 touches on average across the two games for England, which is actually the third lowest of the 28 centre-forwards who have started both of the first two group games. So for context, looking at someone like Karim Benzema for France, he's averaged 44 touches across the two games, so nearly double the involvement that Kane has had. You know, people have said that Kane might be looking sluggish, and that may well have been the case in the past couple of games, but I think there are a few parts to it as to, you know, why this might be the case. And I think while he's perhaps not been showing for the ball quite as readily, it's also about the service into him. And Alan mentions in the piece about the balls coming from central midfield and from wide areas needing to get to him a lot quicker. I think the passes feel a little bit too safe at the moment, which I think has been an issue more at the team level across the past couple of games. And in terms of the positions that he's picking up, you can see within the piece that it isn't too dissimilar to the positions that he's picking up for Spurs last season as well, you know, where he drops deep and just pulls more towards the left half space. But yeah, as Alan rightfully suggests, he doesn't need to go searching for the ball quite as much and dropping quite as deep when you've obviously got the likes of Raheem Sterling, Mason Mount and Phil Foden behind him who are more able to do that as well and leave him at the top end. So yeah, he does pull wide to open up those spaces for others to fill often, and that's obviously how the goal came about for Raheem Sterling's goal against Croatia. But as our most clinical striker, you do want him at that top end and on the end of the attacks. And he might be better staying on the last man for that reason, keeping the central defenders guessing and let those attacking midfielders get the ball to him in dangerous areas. But there's no doubt that at the team level, as I say, they do need to speed up the attack and get it into him a lot quicker. So yeah, I think the problem isn't Kane in isolation. I think it's a little bit more nuanced than that, as Alan suggests. But yeah, the team is built for Kane and perhaps need a little bit more cohesion to play to his strengths. And I guess there's no doubt that suggestions of him being off the pace will have angered him. So yeah, expect to see a response from him in the game against Czech Republic.
And Phil Foden, actually, Jack, he did an interview yesterday, and he backs up what's in this piece and what you mentioned earlier and a little bit what Lindsay said earlier, where Phil Foden went, this is on me and it's on others around as well for not creating these chances for Harry Kane. It's not all on him.
Yeah, I don't think England are getting very good service into Harry Kane at the moment, although, you know, not from the fullback, certainly. Kane tried to run in behind once or twice against Scotland, but he didn't really look sharp enough. And there were times where, frankly, when England did try and get the ball into him early, when he'd lose out in the physical battle with McTominay or Grant Hanley at centre-back for Scotland. So, I think, you know, it's one of those where you can't just put the blame on one thing. Like, it's obviously a series of interconnected things. Although I do think, I just want to mention something Lindsay said earlier, which I think is absolutely spot on, which is that the way that Phil Foden is used to playing in this incredibly synchronised, integrated system at City. And City haven't played with a number nine all season. Like, all, you know, in all the big games this year, City have had De Bruyne basically as a false nine with Bernardo just behind him. And so Phil Foden's not really a guy for getting it into the box. And even when they do, you know, even when they had Sergio Aguero, City would pull the ball back and Aguero would tap it in from 6 yards. And it's just a different, you know, that's not really how Kane plays nowadays. So it is a different game. And I think Foden is sometimes, he does look a little bit like he's struggling to adjust from, you know, the City way to the England way.
A bit like us trying to evaluate the England performances, I think, Chappers. You know, it's somewhere in the middle. And I think it's exactly the same with Kane. I think the answer lies somewhere in that grey area, which is not just about the supply and the service, but it is about him as a physical athlete as well. I honestly think that he has looked tired. And there is one thing that we can point out about Kane going into a major tournament, which is different to any other season, is every other season he's had periods where he's been injured for a significant amount of time, which is also time where he's getting his breath again, isn't he? He hasn't had that this season.
I think one of the problems with Kane is that the last time he had an ankle injury, which was in Mourinho's last game, that 2-2 draw at Everton in April, Kane then came back very quickly for the Carabao Cup final, which was under Ryan Mason. And to be honest, he's not really looked the same since then. He scored, I think, 2 goals in 9 games for club and country in that time. And he's never he's not really hit the heights that he was hitting earlier in the season. I don't know whether it's because the ankle's troubling him, or I don't know if he's just tired because he's played a huge amount of football ever since football restarted, just almost exactly 1 year ago. But he hasn't had a big rest from an injury. And to be honest, he's not really looked as sharp since that last injury in April.
Do you think, David, that if you are trying to gel a Tottenham centre-forward with 2 Manchester City wide men, with a Chelsea attacking midfielder, a West Ham holding midfielder, and a Leeds midfielder, who I think is doing him a disservice to say he's been a holding midfielder as well, because he has got between the lines. Do you think it's understandable, and bad, and then throw the wing-backs in there, right, or the full-backs in there, is it understandable that there is a disconnect? Or should that have been figured out by the time you get to the tournament?
If you think back a year ago when this tournament should have been, how many of these players that started wouldn't have played? So you got maybe Mount, Reece James, Calvin Phillips, Foden. Essentially, it's a new side. Obviously, Raheem Sterling and Kane have got a good, have a good relationship at international level, but it is essentially a new side. So we're finding out things about this team where perhaps other sides have already got it settled, that they've already got their settled squad and they've got that those relationships. And now I also think, I was thinking about this as well, so how do you fix that? Do you put combinations that are used to playing each other at club level? Do you have left-sided centre-half Maguire, Shaw, and then Rashford ahead of him? Do you have Stones, Walker and Foden on the other side of the pitch? Would that help things? Would that help gel things on the pitch? Like I said, though, you've got at least 4 young players who are really just being integrated into the squad in the past season. So can you have that understanding over that short period of time that they've been together in those camps?
And even though it's a new team, and Jonathan Northcroft wrote this in the Sunday Times yesterday, Lindsay, new team, young team, could be for the, we're looking to the future, etc. I think Roy Hodgson said it in 2016. I think it was said in 2012 as well. It was said at the World Cup in 2018. At some point, somebody's going to have to go, this is a team for now, to win now. Like, stop worrying about the future. Try and do something in this tournament.
Yeah, and that's it. The time is now, I think, with this team. We've got some young talent, but they're ready. They're playing regular club football. They're ready for it. I want to see, I know that we're going to get on to starting 11s. I want to see Sancho in this next match. There's a part of me that I think Henderson, as David said, probably isn't going to be fit for 90 minutes. So I think Bellingham. But I think things need to change.
I think Jonathan Northcroft is right. I think that there's no reason this team can't win now. Like, Southgate's been in the job almost 5 years. Obviously, England have got fantastic new young players who are coming through. But Kane's almost 28, John Stones is 27, Raheem Sterling is 26. These guys have been playing at the top level for, the best part of 10 years now. Even the younger players, Mason Mount just set up the winning goal in the Champions League final. Phil Foden's been the best young player in the country. Kyle Walker has been one of the best right back in the country for the best part of 10 years. It's not a completely new team. And we can't always be putting off the point at which England finally gets to deliver further and further into the future. Given the Wembley advantage as well, although whether or not that's an advantage is probably a question for another day, I think England should be under some pressure to deliver something this summer.
Jack, a quick question for you, just about fluidity in this team as well. It has been pointed out that the friendlies, we haven't seen a regular starting 11. A lot of chances were given to other players to just see what they were capable of, where they were at. Ultimately, has that shot him in the foot, that we haven't had any consistency?
I think Southgate's plans were kind of killed, probably not the right word, but they were kind of undermined a little bit by the English teams getting to the Europa League and Champions League finals, because it meant that Southgate, lots of those guys weren't really joining up with Southgate until the first week of June, which meant they couldn't really play in the friendlies. So Southgate couldn't really work. England had to go into the Austrian-Romania games without first-choice players. Like the fact that, Jesse Lingard, for example, who's not even in the 26, was involved in the friendlies, And nothing against Lingard, but that's not really consistent with proper planning for the tournament. So yeah, I do think South, like a combination of the squished calendar plus the success of English teams in Europe has made it very difficult for Southgate to do that fine tuning.
There's just one thing we've not really touched on, and that's a set players. And I think it's something that was huge in the 2018 World Cup. And this time, especially in the Scotland game, I thought we were, apart from the John Stones header, which if you're taking set pieces in the game, that's the one opportunity that, you know, you're trying to create that one big opportunity that he got. But set pieces, it's not just about trying to score goals, but it's also about applying pressure on teams. You know, it's a chance to put pressure on sides and really sort of twist the knife a little bit. And we're just a little bit toothless. And I don't know whether that's because Alan Russell sort of, he's left the FA recently and he's gone to work at Aberdeen. So I don't know whether that's upset that particular part of the England game.
Against Scotland, I lost count of the number of times that from a corner or from a free kick, we didn't clear the first man. Mm. That happened so many times.
But Aberdeen set pieces are going to be brilliant, aren't they, then next season? Hey, you'll be happy about that, David.
It's a good move for them actually, but it is something that they've got to think about though, you know. And on top of that, you know, if we're thinking about that, do we think about the height of the side? Do we, you know, have we got enough attacking threats now? Of course, you know, you'd say Mings, Stones, possibly, and Harry Kane himself. But do you try and tweak things so to get more height in the side? Because if we're not playing well, then there's got to be other avenues we've got to look at to see how we're going to produce goals.
The near post flick, Lindsay, actually, you're talking about trying to beat the first man. All the near post flick, particularly in, I think it was the second half, Foden was the guy who was running to the near post to try and get the flick on in that second half, which sort of backs up David's point on where the height is.
Yeah, and that didn't work, but yet they kept persisting with it. And that's what I found unfathomable, because it just wasn't working.
Let's look at the challenge ahead to England then in their final group game, and we can get a Czech perspective on all of this. I spoke to Carol Herring, editor of Football Club magazine.
Entry. He might have a go, but it's blocked. And instead the break is on. And Schick! Oh, he's gone for the spectacular! That is absolutely stunning! For Patrick Schick, one of the great European Championship goals, a big blow for Scotland, but the Czechs won't care. That is absolutely extraordinary from Patrick Schick.
Carol, thank you very much for doing this. What are your thoughts on how the Czech Republic have performed so far?
I think results are a little bit better than performances. It goes according to pre-tournament plans for Czech teams, because they are now in the position they really wanted to be after the two games, because they have 4 points. So, yeah, the performances are not impressive, but 4 points, it usually should be enough for last 16.
How do they view England?
I think people here have... English football is very popular here because of Premier League. Many people follow it. There are many people who take England as their second team to support for. We all know how incredibly skilled is the group, but of players, I think. Players. But, of course, we could see that the performances are not as was expected. We all know England are a big favorite still. But I think problem for the current Czech team can be that against Scotland, the game was played in the way we liked it. I mean, in terms of, for example, forwards, Dykes and Christie, they are not too fast. And the Czech center defenders can have problems with speed or with fast forwards, but not they are stronger in duels. And if you saw Dice against Kalas, they know each other from championship, so it was good for Czech defenders. Now, when they will have to face Sterling and other very fast players, it can bring them more problems.
That's interesting, because there is a huge debate over here about the form of Harry Kane. And actually, compared to some of the other England forwards, Harry Kane doesn't have the pace of Sterling or Rashford or Sancho. So actually, the Czech Republic defenders would probably prefer to face Kane, if I follow your logic.
Maybe it makes sense, but still you can't. If we talk about Harry Kane, we know the first two games didn't go according to plan or his plans, but still you can't underestimate him. He would punish you if you wouldn't be for 100% prepared.
Whereas the Czech Republic have the form striker of the tournament at the moment in Patrick Schick.
That's true. It's something we are not used to. Too many. You would have to go to Euro 2004 in Portugal when Milan Baroš became the best scorer. You know, with Czech teams, it's very similar, with exception of the generation under coach Karel Brückner and generation of Pavel Nedved, where they were players playing for really big clubs. And it was some kind of exception in our history. But in general, if you look to past last 20 or 30 years, it's usually the Czech teams on tournament, it's usually not about spectacular football, but about disciplined team, tactically prepared team, strong set pieces, good organization. And the difference is made if one of these players can show something extraordinary, some magic moments. You could remember Euro 1996 in England. The team went to the final, but they didn't reach final because of sexy football. It was very defensive football. But moments like Karel Poborský's chip sent the team to the semi-final. And we could see something similar in the game against Scotland, because there are two players who made the result, Patrick Schick and goalkeeper Tomáš Vaclík. So, because Scotland definitely deserve better into the game. Yeah, Patrick Schick now is the, there are already some articles in the papers if he can repeat Milan Baroš success, but definitely you could see he is now very confident. He took a penalty even though he was bleeding before that. Then he took a free kick. So I tweeted that he is now so confident that he is going to throw it in as well. But you know, it's what every forward needs to have great confidence.
Brilliant to have you on, Karel. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us your thoughts on the Czech team. Lovely to talk to you.
Thank you very much for the invitation again.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is The England Show from The Athletic. Keep up to date with all of our Euro 2020 podcasts and writing by following us at The Athletic UK.
So much stuff on The Athletic at the moment around the Euros, as you would expect, and you can read all of them for just £1 a month. Go to theathletic.com/England pod. Jack, what's caught your eye?
There's a great piece by Danny Taylor and Greg Evans about Jack Grealish. It's not like an argument for Jack Grealish playing, because we've heard a lot of those. It's a very, very insightful and revealing look at the dynamic between Grealish and Southgate. You know, what does Southgate want from Grealish? How does Grealish feel about Southgate? How do people close to Grealish feel that he's been treated? You know, looking back at Grealish's struggles with England under-21s, under Eddie Boothroyd, it's really, really good. I learned a lot, and it provides a lot of relevant and useful context for explaining the big issue around England right now.
Lindsay, what have you got for us?
Well, it will come on to my starting 11 because I've been convinced by reading this article. So Rafa Honigstein said about England turning the brilliant Sancho into the invisible man, and it's baffling the Germans. I think if you read that article, you'll realise that Sancho deserves his chance in the sun or in the rain, as it might be.
David, you mentioned the Michael Cox article. Is that yours or have you got something else?
Yeah, I mean, that one, I'll pick that one because obviously Michael's work's really good, but also because I agree with it 100%. But also, yeah, the George Culkin's piece on the need for leaders in the side, I think that's a really good article. And another reason to read George is because he's just the best writer out there.
And just has that melancholy feel when we need it, doesn't he, David? That's the other thing.
I mean, he's mostly downright miserable when he's writing about Newcastle. but wouldn't you be? Wouldn't you be?
Yeah. Yes, you would. Right, good stuff, everybody. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Lindsay. Thank you, David. Good to see you, David. And don't remember, all those articles, £1 a month at the moment to subscribe, theathletic.com/England pod. And Dan Bardell and guests will be back tomorrow with all the reaction from the England-Czech Republic game. Thanks for listening.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.